Hey there, welcome to Take Away with Sam Okus, a podcast from Nation's Restaurant News. I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief here at NRN, and this is the show where I give you an all-access pass to the restaurant industry's most influential decision-makers. This week, I'm talking with Ryan Ostrom, the chief marketing officer for Jack in the Box. We just named Ryan to our power list of restaurant marketers and influencers, recognizing how Jack in the Box has become a leader in restaurant marketing and really has helped to write the playbook in developing an edgy brand persona. Ryan has been the driving force behind Jack in the Box's Crave strategy, in which the brand focuses on being cultural, relevant, authentic, visible, easy, and distinctive to the guest. He joined the podcast to talk about that strategy and how it comes to life. He also explains how the brand has leaned into its quirky personality, particularly with social media influencers. In this conversation, you will learn more about why you can't afford to waste your marketing, why niche influencers provide a more natural opportunity to connect with communities, and why social media is a great place to be edgy, but it must be authentic to your brand. Jumping now into my interview with Jack in the Box CMO, Ryan Ostrom. Also, don't forget to stick around after the interview as I will share my five takeaways from this discussion, actionable insights that you can take with you on the go. Okay, I'm here with Ryan Ostrom, the chief marketing officer for Jack in the Box. Ryan, thanks for joining me today.
Ah, appreciate it. I'm glad to be here.
So you've got a big job, chief marketing officer for Jack in the Box. And it's big because Jack in the Box, to me, is really one of the kings of restaurant marketing. What you guys are doing is so irreverent, fun. I'm on the East Coast, and so there's less of a Jack in the Box presence here, but I feel like everybody still is fully aware of Jack in the Box, which means you're doing your job right. But Ryan, if you could start by telling me, what is the gist of Jack in the Box marketing? How would you explain your job in a minute?
You know, the one thing I would say when I think about my job is one, I'm lucky to be on this brand. I grew up on Jack in the Box. I used to go for the tacos when I was in high school, and really define Jack in a Box and who we are. Like we are the late night leader. We are the brand that kind of pushes the boundaries of what QSR should and shouldn't do. And we really like to go after the competition. We're very comfortable who we are. And we're not afraid to talk about it. And that what makes this job fun. I think a lot of our competitor brands have guardrails. They have certain things they have to follow. By knowing who we really are, we are that late night brand. We are the brand that people kind of partake in the evening after a great night or before a great night. And we kind of own that. And we've done it through our marketing. We've done it through our campaigns. And we really kind of elevated who we are as a brand. And I'm blessed to be in this seat because when you grow up with a brand and you finally work for it, it's just work at it. It's just amazing. And so I love every day I come in.
Well, that's great. I love that. I feel like very few brands get this, but you guys get this, which is you don't take yourselves too seriously. And I think that's probably what makes this work. But I'm curious from your perspective, leading the marketing strategy for a company, obviously you have to take it somewhat seriously. How do you find that balance of being like serious about what you're doing without taking it too seriously?
You know, we have a strong strategy in place behind. I mean, on the outside, it might look like, hey, it's all fun and we don't take ourselves too serious. But we have something called the Crave strategy. And that's something we've been really working on the last 3 years. And Crave stands for, you know, being cultural, relevant, authentic, visible, easy, and distinctive. And everything we do, we make that the barometer at which we roll out. We want to roll out anything that's cultural and relevant to our guests, but we all want to make sure it's distinctively Jack, but also authentically Jack. I think when marketers sometimes go down rabbit holes is when they only do one of those things and they start becoming distinctive to be distinctive, but it's not authentically their brand, and or you're really culturally relevant, but it's not authentic to your brand. And we really make sure the whole team challenges each other as we come up with our campaigns to say, as we continue on our Crave strategy, are we doing it the right way? Are we doing it the Jack way? And are we authentically Jack? And by doing that, we really have opened ourselves up to the right partnership, the right relationships with celebrities and other brands. And it's just been fun. And it really resonates with the guests, which then, of course, resonates with sales.
Sure. Yeah. You didn't mention the V part of that. I mean, you mentioned visibility originally, but I really want to explore that one, too, because visibility now is so fractured, right? I mean, in marketing, you have so many different mediums through which you can get your message out. Of course, today that includes social media. How, what's your approach to visibility today at Jack, and how are you guys really, you know, investing in that?
Yeah, when we think of visibility, it's always the right message to the right people at the right time. That's what marketing's all about. You don't want wasted media. You don't want to be talking to people who don't care about you. And the good news is who we are as a brand. We're that unapologetically Jack brand, that late night brand. It works really well on social. And so we were one of the earlier brands to really go after TikTok and create content and partner with creators differently. We try not to put big guardrails in place. We want the brand to be authentically talked about by our creators. But we also then have tech platforms like Twitch and really hiring our own gamer to play games and play with noobs and talk a little crap out there and give away some free Jack. And that's what we really want to be. We want to be where the guest is and where we're part of the conversation. I think sometimes marketing interrupts the conversation too much. And I think that's where, as a marketer, you want to be part of it. You want to build off it. You want to grow off it. And that's where social really is the forefront of that. And I think we've made some great strides.
Mm-hmm. Do you have lines that you don't want to cross? I'm just curious, is like, cause I know like a lot of these platforms like Twitch, for example, you know, it's a great opportunity to get in front of certain demographics, but I assume there's also, you must have a guidelines for what you do and do not do. I'm curious what you do not do.
The only guardrail we really have in place is no politics and no religion. And we kind of keep the hot topics out of the way, and everything else is, you know, everyone likes to eat and everyone likes to have food and everyone likes to go out. And we kind of loosen those reins on what happens there. Mm-hmm. You know, and I laugh about the politics thing because, you know, I think 20 years ago, Jack ran for president. And so at one point he actually got into the politics world and tried to run for president one time. So sometimes, you know, historically broken those things, but we just try to stay out of the hot topics that just we shouldn't play in, because we're not going to add to the conversation. We're only going to distract. And that's the stuff brands shouldn't do. And we're a food brand. We're about fun. We're about mm-hmm. enjoying life. And that's what we want to make sure we do every day.
Yeah, don't be divisive. That makes a lot of sense. So sticking with social media, you know, of course, social media today, influencers are such a big part of the conversation. We just rolled out our power list on which you were featured. And we talked a lot about the influencers. We featured several influencers on our power list because we really do feel like, you know, social media influencers have gone from this sort of curious trend, you know, into a full-fledged marketing strategy. Tell me about Jack in the Box's strategy with influencers.
Yeah, it's you know, I've been very fortunate in my career to have worked with a lot of brands that were on the forefront and testing and learning with content creators. And now being in this seat, it's more than ever important to say, how do you authentically engage with our ambassadors, is what we call them. And we have a list of, you know, 5 or 10 people that we use all the time, but we really look for people who have enjoyed Jack. We even don't partner with celebrities that don't eat Jack. So like, it's hard for us to partner with East Coast people because we haven't been there for 20, 25 years. We'll be there soon. Give us about 3 years. We'll be on the East Coast.
All right.
And, but you know, we want to really partner with people who grew up with Jack and understand that we are a California born and raised brand that is, you know, you got to know who we are. We're weird. I mean, mm-hmm. what other brand has the slogan, "We're a burger place famous for its tacos"? There isn't another place that says that. We sell egg rolls. We have an egg roll on our menu, and it just shows who we are and how we have that different variety and uniqueness. And we want to bring that to life with our influencers. We have a wide range of influencers. We let them describe how Jack is part of their life, part of their conversation, and will connect to their brands. We're not going to give them scripts. We're not going to give them a bunch of things to say, hey, this is exactly what you want to do. We ask them, how do we participate in your life? How do we become part of that world that you live in to make it really authentic and real and more craved? And that's what's been great for us. And I think we overpunch our weight in TikTok and social media. We're one of the edgier brands and we have fun. I mean, I think the best thing we love to do is we do like to go after the competition a little bit. And we're the underdog brand that, you know, we're the fourth or fifth largest burger player. We're number 2 in California. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the bigger guys like to forget about us, and we like to remind them time to time with some good social media content.
Yeah. With the influencer piece of this, you know, something I've learned through as we put this power list together is a lot I've learned about it, because I'm not a big influencer person, but you know, I've really learned how, yes, you have your Keith Lee 20 million follower type folks, but there's just as much value found in somebody with 10,000 followers that happens to be a very just strong niche that they meet. Tell me about your approach to selecting the right influencers.
And that's it. I think for bigger campaigns, you might hit some of the bigger influencers and you try to get that big massive reach and that following in one swoop. But what we really like to do is build up that groundswell by having those mid-tier kind of niche influencers. And we partner with them because one, it just becomes a little more natural. I think when you get to the bigger ones, everyone knows it's more of a sponsorship and a marketing activation. And when you get to the more niche, you can kind of you pulse yourself in and out of their communities. But we do long-term relationships with them. Like we keep the same, you know, 5 to 10 all year, and we kind of analyze that. We always add another 5, 10 based on the campaign. But we also are just open. I mean, we're also go with guys that might only have 500 to 1,000, but they're diehard Jack lovers, and we want to give them a little love. And because what we do is we repost that content in our channels, and our fans love it. Our social channels are a little, I like to say, odd. I don't know if you follow us a little bit, but like Jack is like a sex symbol now. He's like a sugar daddy based in the social media world. He is an icon that a lot has a cult following of content creators that makes it a lot of fun. Sometimes we do have to censor some things that come our way, but it's a lot of fun with how he's been adopted with our fans about, you know, how amazing he is as a CEO and as a leader of our brand and a mascot that he has just created a following that I never thought he could. So,
yeah. It's interesting because, you know, you guys are really one of the few companies, I think, that has really stuck to the mascot approach. You don't see Ronald McDonald out there really anymore. You know, for Jack, who really is very iconic, and again, I think known even for folks who've never been to a Jack in the Box, what is the right way to leverage a mascot in 2024? It seems like you guys have kind of figured out a secret sauce here.
Well, I mean, we're making him a real person, and yes, he has a big head, and he's our CEO, but we treat him like he's our CEO, and we have really good, this is where we do have guardrails of how does Jack act? How does he represent the brand? He truly acts like a CEO. He's passionate about our food. He's passionate about giving the guests value, and he'll do everything for the voice of the people. And that's why even when I said, hey, he has a following online, well, we created a calendar with Jack. He has his own 12-month calendar of Jack, which we sold out of in minutes when we put that out there. And he's a star of our commercials, and he's the voice of the brand. And it also stems from when you have to look at the history of who Jack is. Like people, what they don't know about how Jack came about was Jack in a Box created the two-way speaker box. And so 1951, it was the first two-way speaker box for drive-through ordering. And it used to be Jack's head on a speaker box that would ask you what you wanted to eat. And so we invented kind of the drive-through, and that's why it's so iconic, because he's been here since day one. And yes, he's evolved who he is. He became more than just a sign on the building to an actually a living, breathing kind of identity of the brand. But that's why he's still here, and that's how we're using him. And we do have guardrails around how he represents us, like we would with any executive. And that's how we treat him.
Right. So, yeah. All right. With social media now, you know, thinking about the voice of Jack in the Box, it's so interesting because on social media, of course, you've got many different platforms. You have to kind of craft the voice uniquely to each platform. But also, I mean, within each platform, it is one voice. But I imagine you have maybe dozens of people behind that voice. What is Jack in the Box's strategy around developing voice for social media? And, you know, what does that process look like on your team?
No, I think we have a strong social team here, and it's driven by a woman named Morgan, who is amazing at what she does. And we have a strong content internal development team, and we help define that. And the way I kind of describe it is I always think of taking it to 11, and what channels do we take that voice, and how edgy we're going to be, and how crave we're going to be with who we are as that competitive brand, and bring that to life on things like TikTok. But when you start thinking about Facebook and some, we tone it down. We start bringing that down a little bit. And so that's mainly the voice is very consistent. It's just how aggressive and challenging. We go after the competition and talk about our products. I think just amps up between a 5 and 11, and we just tone that up and down. And I think it depends on the campaign too. I mean, we're always going to be an edgy brand. I mean, no one else will come out with a pineapple express shake for $4.20, and not many people brands would partner with Snoop. And we have more partnerships coming in the next few months. You know, I think it's just who we are, and we're always going to be right on that edge. Mm-hmm. And it's for us, it's just understanding what channel you're in and what's the right voice for that channel. I think we really hit it on the head in TikTok. And I think it's entertaining content that people just like to listen to and watch and get to know the brand better.
Well, this brand has been around for, I mean, to your point, what, 70 years now?
73 years, I think we're at right now.
Incredible. You know, in that irreverent attitude, maybe not all 70 years, but for any brand today that is, you know, emerging, up and coming, and wants to develop sort of that edge, what would you suggest to them? How do you start from scratch today with that kind of personality?
Well, I think there's a lot of brands out there. Like, I'm a huge fan of Liquid Death. I think they're a brand that's more recent that started up with their edge. They know who they are. They know their brand. And it's really what it's about. We did a lot of research when I got here 3 years ago. And when we did the consumer research and the segmentation, all the 101s in marketing that you always do, we always ask our core guests, what do you like about Jack? What do you miss about Jack? And the thing that came up, it was in our DNA, was the edginess, the ability to do things differently. We serve breakfast 24 hours. We don't follow all the rules that is what McDonald's, Wendy's, and Burger King does. And a lot of our guests said we weren't doing that anymore. We weren't having the edge. We weren't pushing the boundaries. We're being that cheeky brand that people want us to be. And by doing that research, we said, hey, this isn't our DNA. So let's accept it. This is who we are. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I've experienced it working at KFC before. And I remember when KFC tried to sell salads. Well, you know, it doesn't work. It's not what you go to KFC for. So I think at the same time, when you understand who you are as a brand, you can understand your voice. And it's really saying, what is that authentic voice that is ownable, that connects with your guests, that ties to your brand, and then you consistently execute it. Mm-hmm. And that's something I think we're finally doing a really good job over the last 3 years, consistently being our brand across all these channels. Because as you mentioned earlier, that's what's tough. Yeah. I mean, how do you show a brand on TV and then radio and then all these social channels as well, also through influencers, but still kind of create that umbrella effect that people understand who you are as a brand.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So, all right. Late night, as you have said, king of late night, you guys really invest in late night. Now some of that happens organically, right? In menu mix, you know, where you locate your restaurants, that can really have an impact on whether you have a big late night business. But of course, marketing is a big part of what drives late night business. Tell me, what are some specific ways in which you leverage marketing to drive late night business?
I mean, our largest is our Munchie Meal. I mean, we've 10 years ago, we rolled out the Munchie Meal before my time. And what we did is breathe new life into it recently. We had our highest late night performance window last summer, where we partnered with Snoop Dogg. It was a 10-year anniversary of when he launched Munchie Meals with us. So bringing him back really kind of reinvigorated that kind of bundle meal. And it really is used at late night. And we offer it all day, but majority of sales happen after 10 o'clock. It's before you go out or after you go out. And we understand that that's our brand. I mean, we are that late night brand. We're open 24 hours. And we also have that craving that you need no matter when you want to order us. And we continue that. So not only do we have the Munchie Meal and the Snoop programs, but we also buy specific media for late night. So you just think about where our guests at late night. So we buy marketing in Ubers and when people are coming home from bars, we are, you know, trying to buy marketing in bars for while you're at the bar afterwards, you know where to go. Mm-hmm. We are doing our best to surround that late night guest with as much messaging and marketing as possible for we're at that top of consideration set when they're ready to eat. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that makes sense. Late night, though, I imagine, I mean, day parts in general, the last 4 years, of course, post-pandemic, day parts have been all over the place, right? I mean, we thought breakfast was dead, and then breakfast became like the biggest thing ever. Snacking is really in. Of course, I'm sure that probably is big for you guys, too. And of course, the off-premises channels have really changed the ways in which customers engage with brands, right? So I guess what I'm curious about is, Has late night remained as prevalent in a post-pandemic world? And do you expect that to continue to be the case? Or do you think other day parts are also worth exploring for your marketing purposes?
The funny thing for us is late night grew post-pandemic. I think what you saw is a blurring of the lines between breakfast, lunch, and dinner kind of blurred. Uh-huh. Because I think the routines that we did as guests, we've all done it since COVID. Do you go in the office every day? Do you have a lunchtime? Like everything's changed.
Yeah.
So breakfast came later. It became earlier. Lunch became early dinner. Like things just shifted based on life and how that normal commute schedule and routines have shifted. I think late night's always been late night. Like mm-hmm. you have plans to go out. You're going to go spend with some friends. You're going to enjoy it. That's been consistent for us. We've had a lot of brands kind of go after us late night. And we've kind of held our own just because the variety of our menu is different than a competition. But we do see changes in breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and that they're starting to come back to more traditional because I think more people are coming back to the office a little bit. There's more of those routines. And that's what I think as a brand we're all trying to deal with right now. Mm-hmm. Plus, a lot of our competitions are going after everyday part. I mean, between Taco Bell and Wendy's and their breakfast strategy, really trying to grow. You see a lot more brands extending hours because digital has opened up a whole new opportunity for delivery mm-hmm. late night. And so you see these, they're blurring happening, but the one aspect I would say is late night has been consistent for us.
Yeah. All right. So you're growing. Jack in the Box is growing. As you mentioned, you guys have a lot of opportunity in the East. Yes. You know, pretty saturated there in California out West, but I'm sure there's still opportunity around there too. How do you scale a marketing program such as Jack in the Box? Because you are national in that social media is inherently national. It's global. But there are other things I'm sure you have to do to scale the marketing to impact new communities where Jack in the Box moves in. So what does that process look like?
Yeah. So we, you know, one thing we developed over the last year, because we weren't really growing until this new leadership team. So it's been about 3 years. And our goal is to, you know, secretly in our building, we have a saying called no sleep till Brooklyn, where we need to get our stores all the way to Brooklyn and then we're finally done.
There you
go. We have a lot of states between, you know, the Midwest and the Southeast. We got to move up there. But as we kind of look at that, we develop a new market playbook that really says, okay, how do we introduce the brand in new markets? How do we introduce who we are? We have a whole new craved store design, which is really bringing to life our red and purple colors. It has our slogan, which is a burger place famous for its tacos right out front. So you know that something's a little different about us. And of course, we've integrated Jack within, you know, our logo and how we show up. None of this stuff was really happening before. And so as we've been going into new markets, we've had a lot of success because as we go in, we start about, you know, a month prior introducing Jack. We poke fun of the local competition. We do a lot of research of who's big. You know, when we went to Louisville, you know, we bought some billboards going right after KFC and mm-hmm. we're not afraid to back down. I think it was like boxes over buckets. And we'll do a lot of research of what's popular there and how do we bet ourselves within the culture of that region. That's how we introduce Jack. And then as we get moving, then we start rolling out into really simple, hey, how do we showcase our variety? And so we have a lot of advertising shown around our tacos and our burgers and our chicken. And that variety message is doing really well. Our new markets, our last two new markets, are the best performing stores we have in our system right now.
Wow.
And so we plan to open up in four new markets later this year, early next year. You know, we still have Florida. We have growth in Chicago. We have Wyoming, and we're starting to slide that way. And then hopefully, you know, like I said, in about 3 years from now, we'll be up in New York. So
gotcha. Yeah. Yeah, it's you've used this word cultural a lot, and it's when I think of that, I think of, you know, zeitgeist. I think of that idea of a brand really existing in the zeitgeist. I imagine there is a pressure of keeping a brand in the zeitgeist because once you've achieved it, you know, it's hard to stay there. Even for some that reach the pinnacle of marketing, like on top of everybody's minds, we see them spectacularly fall. Do you feel that pressure? And how do you maintain Jack in the Box's position in the zeitgeist?
We're in marketing. We always feel that pressure.
Right.
I don't think there's nobody who's in marketing is comfortable sitting in their seat trying to do what we're doing. Because I think it's grown to a breadth of what our role is. It's no longer just create commercials. I mean, we have to understand the business. We have to run digital. We have to do digital marketing. So many different things. I think when you talk about where our brand is, I think the biggest fear I have as a marketer in my seat is I don't want to just do stupid things to do stupid things to get attention. Because then you start breaking off your strategy and you start just whimsically kind of executing weird ads that don't tie together and don't build the brand. And it's always a fear here for Jack in a Box because we have Jack and because of his humor. It's, I've seen pitches from agencies that take us down paths that you're like, let's just back up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so that's my biggest fear is getting us off the path we need to stay on. And it's really easy to do because there's some, oh, that's a great idea, but if it doesn't tie, we need to have the patience to say, okay, maybe it's just not right for us. It's not following that Crave strategy. And the whole team does it here. We all challenge each other all the way down to the entry-level marketing people all the way to myself. We say, is this right? Is this something we should be doing? Mm-hmm. And we all have a voice on that. And I think that's what's really allowing us to stay in that spot we're at right now. And hopefully we can continue.
Yeah. All right. So Ryan, last question for you. You know, marketing is so much of the moment. Of course, it's knowing what the trends are, especially today with social media. There's so much of knowing what do people want right now. But I imagine in your position, you have to also look very much to the future and understand what's around the corner as it relates to marketing. What do you anticipate for the future? What are you looking at right now that you feel is going to affect your job in the coming years?
Well, I think, you know, interesting thing about my background is I consider myself a little different in marketing because I grew up through e-com. I'm somehow grew up through e-com to become a CMO versus CMOs learning e-com and loyalty and all that. And I think that's really what's, you know, starting to transform and it's going to continue to transform the food industry is leveraging customer data through personalization and loyalty, driving that extra visit, owning that because it's easier for me to bring those guests in than me trying to market on mass TV to bring in who saw it. Is enticing to them. I can now personalize communication and bringing them in. I think marketing and technology is getting so blurred today. It's kind of like how you mentioned the day parts are getting blurred. Or I said that's technology and marketing are just, they're hand in hand now between not only loyalty, but kiosks and delivery and pickup and e-com. It's a different mindset that a lot of brands and retailers and especially restaurants are dealing with today because not only do we have to bring our peers along, we have to bring our franchisees along and understanding that the investment and the money it takes to drive these things are different than it used to be to just drive a commercial.
Yeah.
Like I need to invest in my app every single day to make it better because the guest expects an Amazon style experience.
Right.
And, you know, but when you say that to a franchisee, they're like, well, we don't invest in our stores every day. Like we don't repaint every day. And I'm like, well, we have to on the app. Like we have to repaint and we have to rebuild the engine almost every day to make it faster, quicker, more effective, because that's what the competition's doing. And that's the real fight that's going on. So I think that is where this business is going. It's about, you know, 5 to 10 years behind traditional retail. And, and we're really getting that spot where we are getting loyalty information. We are getting data. We are getting e-com. I think there's still a lot of enhancements on the ease part of our Crave strategy around pickup and delivery, as well as easy for the employees. You know, how you make the food, how you make it consistently, and the technology used in the back of house is the other evolution. And you see that from every brand you talk to, from McDonald's, Wendy's, Taco Bell. Everybody's investing in technology and digital to make it easier for the guests or the employees.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a big job, but I think you know what you're doing. So Ryan Ostrom, the CMO of Jack in the Box, thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Jack in the Box CMO Ryan Ostrom. So what should you learn from this interview? Here are my 5 takeaways. My first takeaway is that you can't afford to waste your marketing. Ryan talked about the fact that Jack in the Box is really laser focused when it comes to its marketing. It's not the, you know, bazooka approach, as I like to call it, where you're just throwing a bunch of stuff out on the different mediums and hoping that it works. Jack in the Box knows exactly who it is as a brand and what that personality is, and knows exactly who it wants to talk to. As Ryan said, they talk to the right people at the right time with the right message. Ryan also said, don't talk to people who don't care about you. I find that really interesting because some might suggest, oh, well, you do want to reach those people because they're potential guests. They're, you know, new guests to your brand. But Jack in the Box has a very distinct product and a very distinct brand. And because of that, has a very distinct customer. And because it knows that, it wants to find those customers through its marketing channels. So that's why Ryan says they don't waste the marketing. They don't waste that message on people who don't care. They really focus in on those people who do care. And even if you don't have as distinct a brand as Jack in the Box does, I think that message still holds that you shouldn't waste your marketing dollars by just throwing a message out there and hoping it sticks. Really focus your message to the right people. My second takeaway is that marketing shouldn't interrupt the conversation with the guest, but be a part of it. I think this was a great point that Ryan made, is that you shouldn't just assert yourself into the conversations happening on platforms, particularly online, whether that's Instagram or TikTok, whether that's Twitch, Facebook, whatever it is, whatever the platform, however you're engaging with fans. Don't just, you know, force your way in and force this message down the throat of your brand and then get out of there. Blend your brand into that. Really become a part of it. Ryan explained that, you know, social media is this conversation and they really want to build off that conversation and be a part of it with the Jack in the Box branding and messaging. And that has really worked from the brand. He also explained they don't want to distract. And, you know, I asked him, are there any lines they don't want to cross? Because Jack in the Box does get very edgy, certainly more edgy than most restaurant brands. And, you know, he said the two things they don't want to do are talk about religion or talk about politics. That makes a lot of sense. But what he pointed out that I think is an important message is he doesn't want that to distract from the conversation. There's a conversation going on in social media just about what's going on in the zeitgeist, the culture. And that's the conversation Jack in the Box wants to be a part of. And again, they want to build off of it, not distract from it. My third takeaway is that influencer marketing must be authentic, not scripted. This was really a message shared across all of the Power List representatives that we recently shared. By the way, if you want to go check out the Power List on which Ryan is a part, go to nrn.com/power-list. Again, nrn.com/power-list. That's where you will see the 25 marketers and 25 influencers that we've highlighted on our Power List. But you'll also see, again, a lot about how to properly leverage social media influencers. And I found it incredibly educational. I'm sure you will too. And this is one of the key takeaways I took away from all of the Power Lists and Ryan really drilled into in this conversation. When you work with influencers, don't force it. Don't script it. Don't tell them what to do and what to say. Come into a partnership with them, collaborate with them, and then invite them to share their authentic message about your brand. You're going to give up a lot of control when you do this, but social media and influencers are all about authenticity, and viewers will see right through it if it's forced or scripted. So this is a really great point, is that you must be authentic with the influencers. Don't tell these creators what to say. Let them show it authentically how they have this connection to your brand. My fourth takeaway is that niche influencers provide a more natural opportunity to connect with communities. So this was another lesson that I've been learning over the last couple of months as we reported on the Power List, which is, you know, yes, you have your Keith Lees with millions and millions of followers. And, you know, those folks are going to be very expensive to use for your marketing. You also have your micro influencers who are at a much smaller scale, you know, maybe 10,000 followers, and maybe they're a little bit more focused on a region. Ryan said that Jack in the Box likes to focus somewhere in the middle zones of influencers. They want to focus on particular communities and really zero in on reaching those communities, because they don't want to spend on these mega celebrity influencers, but they also obviously do want to have a sizable enough audience that it makes sense for their marketing. So they shoot for somewhere in that middle group. And I guess the lesson here again is, you want to really find the niche that you're trying to fit. What is the audience you're trying to reach? Because those communities are online and there are lots of influencers who represent those communities. Find those influencers, no matter how big their audience is, if they have a lock on the conversation happening with that community, they can be very fruitful to your brand. I thought another point that was really interesting that Ryan said is, you know, it's obvious when you spend a lot of money on a famous influencer, it feels forced. And that's why, you know, those celebrities might not always be the right path to take. sometimes it makes sense to find somebody who's not a celebrity, who's not widely known, but again, they have the attention of a specific community, and it's a community that you want to reach. My fifth and final takeaway is that social media is a great place to be edgy, but it must be authentic to your brand. So again, we've been talking about this authenticity factor on social media and how that is just so important to followers and viewers on social media. They will read right through something that is not authentic. But it's this edgy factor I wanted to drill in on here, especially because Jack in the Box is really known for that edginess, that quirkiness, that irreverence. And I love how Ryan explains, you know, they dial that up. He says they shoot for somewhere between 5 and 11, you know, depending off if it's Facebook or if it's TikTok. They're dialing it up and down to figure out what's the proper level of edginess. But he says, you know, you don't want to be edgy for edgy's sake. That is all part of a plan and a strategy that Jack in the Box has that really fits the brand well and really is a part of its DNA, as he said. Don't be edgy for edgy's sake. If you want to be edgy, make it something that's authentic to you really from the jump. Bake it into the DNA of your brand, and it will make a lot more sense in your marketing. Those are all my takeaways for today. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please remember to subscribe to Takeaway wherever you listen to podcasts and leave your feedback. You can also email me at sam.okus@informa.com. And once again, remember, you can go to the power list at nrn.com/power-list. Thanks again, and talk to you next week.